Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, I wanted to talk to you guys about the MLB Roto Baller Challenge, hosted by our friends at Fantrax on Fantrax.com. Fantrax is the most customizable free fantasy baseball platform in the industry, and that's why we're hosting over our 2022 Roto Baller Challenge over on Fantrax. If you want the greatest fantasy experience, sign up for a free Roto Baller Challenge team today by going to rotoballer.com/challenge. All leagues are free to join, and you get to compete against Roto Baller writers and readers for a shot at $500 cash grand prize. All new Fantrax users get entered into a free giveaway to win a signed official MLB Wander Franco jersey. If you want to get entered to win a Wander Franco jersey and you're new to Fantrax, go to Fantrax.com/Bubba and sign up for your free Fantrax account today. Once you have your Fantrax account, go to rotoballer.com/challenge to join the Challenge League, but go to Fantrax.com/Bubba to create your Fantrax account, be entered to win a Wander Franco autographed jersey. But for now, welcome to Benched with Bubba. And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 447. We continue on our baseball talk because we actually have baseball. It's official. Like, I got off the air with Maddie Mo yesterday, and we were sitting there, like, talking. And literally, first thing I do when I open up Twitter, it's like, they're exchanging stuff, like, quickly. Like, it's actually kind of looking like a conversation all of a sudden. So we've got baseball, and what makes it even better is that means we have DFS and season-long baseball, which makes this scheduling like just meant to be, this rescheduling, I should say, meant to be, to have a great friend of the show, a great friend of mine. We used to do many shows together, but scheduling and families make things complicated. And he's got a big website now. He's doing big boy things at paydirtdfs.com. You can find him on Twitter at paydirt_DFS, the one, the only James McCool. How we doing, my friend?
Hey, dude, I'm doing pretty well. I did not even realize this is episode 447 for you. I mean, that's like, I don't think I could do 400 episodes of something if I had been born in like 1942. That's so many episodes.
Yeah, that's just this show. Like, if I wanted to count the other shows, I spend too much time on my microphones, apparently.
Insanity. But yeah, I'm doing good, man. Lots of big life changes over the last couple months, and over the last year too, right? I mean, yep. having our first child, and he just turned one, 2 weeks ago. So now have a toddler, and he's gigantic. We were talking before the show, and he is 1 year old, but he's already well into 2T clothing. He's just a gigantic baby. You know, like that nightmare baby that people like make fun of. That's just like giant. Yeah, that's basically him. He's huge. We live in Nashville now. We live, well, Tennessee. We live farther away now towards the East Coast, and getting used to that. And yeah, baseball starting back up. That's huge because we were, super worried that baseball wasn't starting. And I love baseball. You and I both know that I love baseball as a DFS sport and as a fantasy topic, just because the modeling is so fun for it. And it's one of my favorite models that we've built. So happy to have that back. And yeah, I have a site that I've been running for a while now, paydirtdfs.com. It was paydirt.ghost.io. And then I closed that host down because I didn't like the membership opportunities. Like the membership stuff was weird on it. So I moved over to WordPress and rebuilt the site back up in WordPress. So now everything is over there. So if you know me from the ghost.io site and you haven't checked out paterdfs.com, there's daily, weekly, and monthly subscription options that you can have. And if you want to sign up for monthly, there's a coupon, Double Dong, all capitals, for the baseball season starting up. It'll get you $10 off your first month if you want to try things out. And like I said, I cover every single sport. So it's not just baseball included in that. It's every single sport.
Yeah, and if you follow James on Twitter, you see he's got a monster Discord. I believe it's Discord, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like the people are always in there, and James crushes the. I'm going to sound bad here because I know it's actually I remember the esports game. I was going to say video games, esports games. He crushes though. Like his members are always posting like massive screenshots. And one thing with James, I think what always was fun recording when we did football together for so long, is he's got the brain for the models where I'm just kind of like, let's just kind of plug and play things. And so like esports and then baseball, because it's so long, you can kind of accumulate stats. And when I even NBA, because you can kind of look at playing time projections, mm-hmm. like those just fit right into James's models. And he's always tweaking them. He's always doing projections, and his people do pretty darn good. It's pretty darn, it's not all the fluff you get from other sites. So it's not just saying it cause he's a friend. I'd say, check it out. It's worth it for sure.
Yeah. I really, really put a lot of emphasis on helping people. Because I'm not in it to make a bunch of money. You know, if I wanted to make a bunch of money, then I would just play DFS. But I like helping people. I like teaching people how to play. I like putting things together for people to go find success on their own. So that's always been my thing. And that's why I do every single sport. That's why I build the models that I do. And yeah, especially esports, you won't find better projections anywhere in the industry. The projections over Paydirt are better than anything you'll find. And I think my baseball model is certainly fantastic, especially the game level side and the strikeout projections and stuff like that. There's a whole bunch of stuff. We'll go over it on the podcast. But I'm really, really excited to have baseball back because it is a sport that I think modeling. And when you say, oh, he has a brain for modeling, it's like, I have a brain for modeling, and I also have like a good understanding of how to build a good lineup versus a bad lineup.
Yes.
Like when I coach people, it's very easy to see in the first like session, even in the first session, you can see some lineups they build, and it's just like, it's hard to grasp certain concepts, but it's once you work through it, especially for baseball. One of the reasons why I like baseball is because you can really tell a good lineup from a bad lineup. Mm-hmm. In NBA, you can't. I mean, straightforward, you can't. In NBA, a really, really good lineup is going to look as solid and as high upside as like a median good lineup. And a great lineup is going to look like a pretty good lineup. You can tell a bad lineup from a good lineup. There's a large gap there in NBA, but you can't tell a good lineup from a great lineup. So much of it is just variance. But in baseball, like, you can really, really tell. In esports, you can really, really tell if somebody knows what they're doing and knows how to put together lineups and can think through the concepts involved there. So that's why I like baseball the most. And that's why my subs have so much success in those sports that are correlation-based and that are very math-based, because you can tell, like, people can build better lineups in those. I think that there is a larger skill gap in those kind of sports.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And that's like, even you can take it to season long as well. I've been telling people, like, this year in my drafts I've been doing, it's more about roster construction for me than just like looking at, you know, this player's cool, which you can then take back to DFS. You're saying building the right lineups. It's like there's a different mindset to putting the right pieces in play there. If it's an ownership thing, if it's a projection thing, if it's both, like, depends on how you want to go about it. And you've got a great brain for that. That was one of the really fun parts when we were doing the football and talking about like why you would say like, okay, this guy is sure he's probably going to be the better play, but ownership wise and potential projection, like, you know, max projection upside, mm-hmm. I'm going this route and this is why and blah blah blah. And it makes so much sense when you're able to grasp that concept. And we talk about it, and we will talk about it more. Some people just have a hard time grasping that because it doesn't feel good sometimes. Like the lineup just doesn't mm-hmm. like look aesthetically pleasing to them, because and those are the people that live in the mid cash world. And it's like, if you want to win the GPPs, you got to be willing to go out there and look at the grand picture. And before we get into a little more of that, something that talks about your lineup construction and stuff along those lines, you wrote a book with Bender. Why don't you plug that real quick?
Yeah, we've had this out for a while, but we have an audiobook called Theory of DFS. If you go to theoryofdfs.com/masterclass, it's a 14-hour long seminar type book. Blender and I, Blender HD, who you guys know, Jordan Cooper, him and I wrote it out. And at first we were writing it in an actual book form. And then we decided it would be much better to have it in kind of like an audio back and forth type podcast type thing. It just makes a lot more sense and people can work through it a lot easier. It goes over every single concept you could possibly need to find success in DFS. It goes over roster construction. It goes over how to build projections. It goes over how to look at range of outcomes. It goes over all the math involved, but it's not super mathy. Like I want to point that out. It's not like we're throwing formulas at you. The only formulas that I think really were in there that I talked about were like, we went over the formulas for expected value and we went over the formulas for Kelly Criterion. But outside of that, a lot of it is kind of trying to put together examples that make a lot of sense that people can grasp and then apply it to DFS. And I have not heard a single person who has bought it and said that it was something that didn't help them. I've only heard good things, which is awesome. Cool. Great. That's the goal. But I do seriously suggest that anybody who wants to get better at DFS and at skill games in general, go pick it up and listen through it multiple times, because it's a lot of content. It's really, really good. And we put a lot of work into it.
Yeah, definitely check all that out. We've talked about it before, but for the new listeners or some just wanting to recap, we're going to kind of go over our DFS, like how to, you know, the cash versus GPP mindset and stacking and stuff like that. And then we'll dig into your site as we go. So let's just have some fun here. You don't like to play cash a ton, do you? Not as often.
It's boring.
Yeah.
It's boring. So when I play now, I used to play to make money, like everyone on the planet started out playing DFS because they wanted to make money. And now I play mostly to test my models and kind of like have a little bit of skill expression, if that makes sense. So Some people like to go to the movies and spend $25 and go to the movies. Some people like to go out and do this, that, or the other, go to, I don't know, the aquarium or something. I like to build lineups and test things out and try things out. And that's my entertainment sometimes. Because like we have a kid, we can't go out every night. So yeah. I like to do things like that. And cash games are, while they are a good part of a portfolio, if you are trying to grind out money and actually make money over the course of the season, I do always heavily suggest that people play cash games to mitigate their losses in GPPs. Mm-hmm. But if cash games are not your vibe, I totally understand. The cash games are fine. It's just, it's boring. Like the lineups that you build, you look at them and you're just like, oh yeah, this is just what everybody else is going to build. And then you just put in a lineup and you just go with it. And there's just no skill expression to it.
Yeah, no, that's the, like NFL's the worst at it because it's almost like it's a 1v1 at times to kind of make things work out. And that's just like wanting to pull out teeth. But, you know, you can still definitely, like you said, you can build a bankroll, maintain a bankroll, but you're not going to, you know, retire on cash games type situation. Well,
and I build cash games in a very, very unique way. Most people will go over and they'll use optimizers and they'll optimize things out and try to find the best projection combo. And I actually prefer to build based on ownership. So I take a market value approach, meaning that I basically want to build a lineup that makes it so that I have the highest owned players across the entire slate so that people who are not on those really chalk players have to beat the consensus. So if you play with the consensus in cash games, remember, you only want to finish, you don't want to finish first in a double up. You basically never want to finish first. That means that you built a lineup that likely was too high variance for cash games. You mostly want to finish like in the 40th percentile, 35th to 40th percentile. You don't really want to finish first. So my strategy is just to say, okay, if I can get every single player in my lineup over 50% owned, that means that the people who are building those high variance lineups then have to beat the consensus in order to cash. Because I don't actually want to beat people. I just want to finish in the top 49% of the contest, right? So yeah. I take that approach to it. And I guess that helps a little bit in terms of skill expression, but it's a very, very viable strategy, especially in things like NBA and in things like NFL, where chalk is very easy to build up and it is usually pretty successful. In MLB, it's a little bit harder, right? Because the differences in variations between players are so high that even chalk players fail at such a high rate that that doesn't really work. So cash games, they're harder for me in baseball, but in NFL and NBA, I really like to build cash games that way.
Yeah, that's how in the Discord that I run, I haven't been doing too much NBA of late. Once the COVID wave started to come, I just gave up. Every year I start NBA, and then once all this injury crap happens, I just like stop caring. It happens every year with me. And but NFL, that we did that a lot with the ownership deal. It was like, okay, let's build our lineups. And like we'd be on a lot of the similar builds. We'd just like 1v1, 2v2 type deals. But a lot of it was ownership based 100%. Or it was like, here's the top three quarterbacks. Try to take one of these three at least. Here's like so on and so forth and build. And it was actually pretty darn profitable overall as the season went. It's like, so it's exactly what you're saying. It's if you play the ownership game, you don't have to be perfect, because it's one of those, if that guy fails, well, that many people are all failing with you. So you're still like not getting crushed. And it's hard to explain that to people until they started seeing it more and more. Cause you know, you sit there and there'd be weeks where it'd be like a 70% running back and he'd go out on the third drive with an injury and you're sitting there going like cussing at the moon. But you sit there and go, that's 70% of us. Only 49% of us have to be good to cash. We're still in this, guys. Like, it's not over. That's why you played that person. That was the whole point of that situation. So yeah.
Think about the math on that really quick. Like, if you have a full lineup of 60% owned players, like every single player in your lineup is 60% owned, that means that if all of them get zeros, you still have a chance. Well, not all of them get zeros, but like if all of them do necessarily badly, maybe one of them does well, you still have a chance to cash.
Yep.
Because they're all 60% owned. So like only 40% of the field can pass those players anyway. Now you might not get a full payout. You might not fully double your money, but if you do with fully 60% on players, like it is on the onus is on the people who faded the chalk to do better than the chalk. And that's hard to do the entire season.
The entire season. Yeah. You can do it from time to time for sure. But the entire season, tricky. So you mentioned with baseball, it is different because the variance, like 1-for-4 is a good night, but one guy might go 1-for-4 with a double. One guy might go 1-for-4 with a 3-run homer. And that just makes things a whole, like that's a big gap in production. And that's just the way of the world. So like we don't have to go super deep into the philosophy, but when you're building cash in baseball, are you looking more for like the mispriced players? Are you looking more for the locked in safe pitchers and building around that? How do you kind of go about your cash game builds? I know it could be a slate by slate basis too. I get that. But how do you kind of go about it?
I usually focus pitcher first, because pitchers are so much more secure. Mm-hmm. And then you build out, you probably want to have like one of the cheap bats that is going to be, you know, really, really popular. But if you start with the popular pitchers, and you start with the underpriced pitchers, say that you start a cash lineup with like Gerrit Cole, who is 10.2K or something like that on DraftKings. And then, like Luis Castillo last year, there was a point when he was like 6,900 or something like that.
Yeah.
And of course, he was going to get locked in cash. So if you start there, then you can kind of get an idea of where else you're going to go. Like, okay, so we started there, and then the Dodgers are facing the Orioles. So then you're going to plug in Mookie Betts, and you're going to plug in whatever lefty that they have, whatever left-handed bat they have in there that's platoon hitting. So then you have another two hitters, and then, you know, you have the Yankees. So you're probably going to plug in Giancarlo Stanton or Aaron Judge or whatever. And then you can kind of look and see, all right, what are the rest of the values on the slate? Is there a core slate that has a really cheap catcher? Okay, plug him in. Once you plug in the pitchers, you kind of have an idea of how much money you can spend on your outfield. And then you have an idea of how much you can spend on your infield after your catcher. So typically I'm going to go pitcher, figure out what my pitcher is going to be, and then I'll look at the outfield, depending on how expensive my pitchers are. Because if I have two 10K pitchers, it's very unlikely I'm going to be able to spend like 5K on outfield. I already know that I'm just going to have to drop down in like the 3K, 4K range in the outfield, and then I'm going to have to punt catcher, and then I can figure out the infield. Outside of like the player picking, the way that you actually build rosters, I think that a mistake that a lot of people make when they're building out cash games for MLB is they're trying to correlate too much.
Yeah.
So in GPPs, you want correlation.
Yep.
Because you want to be focused very heavily on, if one team explodes, I do really well in GPPs. In cash games, you don't necessarily want that correlation, because it puts all of your eggs in one basket. Like if you have four hitters from the Yankees, then you're completely dependent on the Yankees to do well in order to do well in cash games. But if you only have two, and then you have two from the Dodgers, and then you have two from the Pirates because they're cheap, and you have two, yada, yada, yada. It reduces the variance on your lineup and it raises the floor. So I think that's probably the biggest thing for cash games is that people correlate too much. People raise too much variance in their cash games for MLB. But outside of that, yeah, just focus on pitchers first and then outfield. Use your pitchers to define how much you can spend in your outfield, and then the rest pretty much just fits into place most of the time.
Yeah, I like the comment on the stacking for sure, because people they focus on that. It's like, oh, it's just a 3-man stack. I do 4 to 5 in a GPP. I'm like, it's still too many. Like you said, all your eggs in one basket. If that somehow with the variance that Orioles pitcher throws 7 strong, mm-hmm. and even if he gives up 3 runs, it's not gonna be enough to do a lot for you. So you're in trouble, and that's just the brasses of it all. Now, when it comes to GPP, yes, you want to stack. How do you go about your pitching situation? Are you willing to take more risk? Do you want to lock in good pitchers? I guess it could depend on what stack you want to use, because that could be expensive. But how do you usually go about that?
Yeah, usually I look at stack first when it comes to baseball. When it comes to football, obviously you have your quarterback, and then you build everything off of your quarterback. But in baseball, I do focus a lot more on stacks. So I will go into my stack projections and the models. And I'll look at the scoring percentages and stuff, which we'll show that off later. But I have a metric called 8+ runs. So that measures how often in my simulations a team scores 8 or more runs, which is super self-explanatory. But that's really, really important for GPPs, upside and team scoring runs. So I'll usually look at that first and get an idea. Say, the Dodgers look really, really good. They have like a 23% chance of scoring 8+ runs, but they're really expensive. So then you'll want to look and see, well, what teams are cheap that look like they're going to score a whole bunch of runs. The Astros are on average $3,900 and they have an 8+ runs of 21%. But the Dodgers are like on average $4,500 and only have 2% extra. So I'll probably want to go with the Astros instead. But after I choose stacks, because I think are more important in GPPs, since a lot of people are going to be plugging in certain pitchers. After I choose the stacks that I really like, I will look and see if there's going to be a bad starting pitcher that people are on just because they want to fit in another stack, right? So the Luis Castillo comment from before, where he was 6,900, my models hated him at that point in the season. Like, I was stacking against Luis Castillo like every slate that I could, because he was bad. He was missing. The problem was that he would get frustrated and then he would start throwing and trying to pump in strikes when he just didn't have the count for it. So batters were just teeing him up just constantly. And even though he throws like 9,900 miles an hour, if he wants to, like, that doesn't matter if he can't miss bats. So he was going to be chalked, going to be like 45% owned. So after you've already chosen a main stack that you can put in, and then you identify there's going to be some pitcher that is not really very good that people are going to make chalk just so they can fit in other stacks. Like, maybe people were using Luis Castillo to fit in a Red Sox stack. You could still go with the Red Sox and then just stack against Luis Castillo instead with your secondary stack. So it all starts with stacks. And then pitchers, a lot of times I just look for upside. When I go into my metrics, I'm going to be looking at projections, of course, but I'll want to be looking at strikeouts. I'm going to be looking at range of outcomes. So I have a range of outcomes in all of my models. And for pitchers specifically, it shows how often they're the top scoring pitcher. It shows how often they reach different fantasy point thresholds, like 10 to 15 fantasy points, 15 to 20, et cetera. I want to try to find, like the example from the models right now is Huascar Wainoa. I have no idea how to pronounce his name. But he was really cheap on this slate, 6,700, but he had a 25% chance of scoring 15 and 20 fantasy points. So he was just a very obvious pick for me in terms of this slate, just because he's really cheap and he has good upside. So things like that. I really want to focus on upside when it comes to pitchers, and I'm fine eating variance. I'm fine taking on a lot of risk. The big thing I think is making sure that you nail the stacks and hopefully the pitchers come through.
I know you kind of talked about it a little bit there, but how much do you factor in ownership projections? Because there's one thing to like a stack that's going to go off. There's another thing like a chalky stack that's going to go off. And I know that can dictate things. And sometimes chalky stacks is just what it is. Like I tell people is you can fade things all you want. A lot of the logic makes sense behind it. But at the same time, there's so much good content out there now that there is good chalk. Like, it's just part, like in football especially, like there's just certain, a couple plays here and there you almost feel like you have to play. Like, again, you can fade at your own risk if you want. But when you're building, so I know you are very, very risk is an upside. Upside play is what you're looking for. How are you building your stacks? Like, I know you probably have a list of three or four that are looking like good projections, but maybe do you go to the lowest owned? Do you go to the middle owned? How do you go about that?
I don't mind eating chalk when it comes to main stacks. I don't mind eating chalk in general, so long as I know that there's a way for me to find leverage on the field.
Yep.
So if I am looking at, say, like the top build is going to be something like Red Sox with Gerrit Cole with Luis Castillo. I'll just keep using that example. Usually I won't go with all three of those things. I want to find leverage either in my SP1, my SP2, or my main stack. Okay. So if I have Gerrit Cole and the Red Sox, I definitely do not want Luis Castillo. If I have Gerrit Cole and Luis Castillo, I definitely don't want the Red Sox. If I have Red Sox and Luis Castillo, I probably don't want Gerrit Cole. If you are going to do that, if you're going to eat a lot of chalk, then you need to find a way to gain a lot of direct leverage after that, and probably stacking against another popular pitcher, or taking a really, really low-owned stack to make it all work, like a Pirates or a Rays or something like that. You just need to have – there needs to be one form of good leverage in MLB. And most of the time, if there's ever a player that's going to be over 30% owned, I just straight up don't want them.
Yeah.
Like, I just straight up don't want them. That there's – on in each individual game, there's about a seven – the best hitters in the entire league have about a 7% chance of hitting a home run in any given game against any given pitcher, or like against the worst pitchers. That's the – I put every hitter in the league up against James Shields the last year of his career and found that even Cody Bellinger, who was having his MVP season, only had a 7% chance of hitting a home run that game. So I'm not going to play a 30% on Cody Bellinger if I don't have to. Sometimes if I think there's a lot of really, really good leverage on another pitcher – like say there's only gonna be like a 5% owned cheaper pitcher that I identify as having like a lot of upside, or maybe somebody, maybe the entire world is on Max Scherzer, but Corbin Burns is gonna be like 4% owned or something. Then it's like, okay, I can eat chalk at hitter and take this 3% owned massive upside pitcher. Or maybe both pitchers are really, really low owned and I have all that chalk at bats. That's fine, but it never feels good. I never like having a really, really highly owned hitter. It's just that the odds are against you. You're really, you're playing against the probabilities and you're playing against the non-binomial distributions when it comes to home runs. Like it's just bad process. I think I would always much prefer to have a lower or medium owned stack and eat chalk at pitcher. Mm-hmm. And that's usually how my lineups will end out. Especially at the top end of pitcher. It's just, I really, really hate eating chalk at hitter in baseball.
This is why we have so many similarities, because so much you said there, I've been trying to teach people as well, as it's, I'm okay eating pitcher chalk because variance is all over baseball, but there's a reason why certain elite pitchers are elite. Mm-hmm. It's like the old saying that, you're a very, very, very good pitcher if you have every 2 out of 3 starts is good. Like, that's how, like, if you just wrap your head around that for a second, like, even great pitchers will have a bad start, but they have much fewer of them. Like, it's simple. It sounds simple, but people, like, overlook that so much. And so that's why they're priced up, and you can kind of eat that a little bit and play the game. And then the other thing you mentioned is I love finding the value stacks, per se. Like, you mentioned the Pirates. The Royals were always involved there. Like, the Tigers had a hell of a run mm-hmm. there for a while. I'm the biggest fan of that. I remember in my chats, people would be like, Bubba, why are you on the Tigers again? Like, well, just trust me in this one. Play blah, blah, blah. And like, or make your pick out of like 4 of this group. Like, figure it out. And and then you can pretty much be different. You can basically eat all the chalk you want after that. Just knock yourself out. Because you said it works in all sports, probably even esports. It's all DFS. You can eat chalk as long as you differentiate. And I tell people in golf the most, because golf has gotten really sharp. So there's a lot of good chalk in golf. That's just the shame of it all. You have 6 roster spots. I say if you can be different in 2 of them, mm-hmm. you can eat everything else you want. Everything. So I told people this week, and it's still round 1, and a lot can change, but I said, Kevin Kisner is projected to be less than 3% rostered. He eats up Pete Dye courses. Well, he's 4 under after round one. He could still tank, given, but just that leverage alone allowed you to do whatever the hell you wanted, pretty much, mm-hmm. with your lineup. And so it's just little things like that. And in baseball with the variance, it's so much more important, I think. When you mention your stacks or primary stacks or secondary stacks, when you build your stacks, do you have like a certain spot? Like some people like 1 through 5, some people like this, that, and the other. Some like hopping around the lineup. When you're building your stacks, how do you like kind of correlating your stack?
In a perfect world, like 2 through 6. Okay. In a perfect world. The leadoff hitter is typically fine, but like leadoff hitters typically don't have a lot of power. And nowadays in the MLB, it's more often that they have power on certain teams, but there's a lot of guys that like I'm fine skipping out on the first. But I wouldn't even say that I care that much. I mostly just want to get 5 guys from the same team. Okay. And that's kind of like a taboo thing to say, because even though I talk a lot about correlation and even though I talk a lot about making sure that you're maximizing your correlations and GPPs, if the only way for me to fit the Boston Red Sox is to do like a 1, 2, 4, 6, 9, yeah, then that's what I'm going to do. Yeah. And like, I'm just going to eat that up, and then I'll have correlation from 9, 1, 2. And then I have 4 and 6 that are, yep, still sitting there in the middle. But like, if a team scores, if you want to win a GPP, your team pretty much has to score like 13 runs most of the time or something, like 10, 12 runs. And if a team scores 10 to 12 runs, you don't know where that production is going.
That's why spreading it out sometimes works really well.
Yeah, for you really, yeah, don't. And as much as the extra correlation is very, very nice, if you can get 1 through 5, that's great. Awesome. Fantastic. A lot of times that just doesn't work out, especially with the way that you have to stack up 2 teams. Since I'm almost always doing either a 5-3 or a 5-2-1, I just think that however you can fit those 5 to maximize the secondary stack, because the secondary stack is almost more important. The secondary stack is where, mm-hmm, you are really, really pushing to have the important parts of that team, because it's so much more condensed. Yep. If my secondary stack is the Yankees, there's no way that I'm not going to have Aaron Judge in that stack. There's no way that I'm not going to have Giancarlo Stanton in that stack, right? So that secondary stack, I think, is even more important than the first stack. The first stack usually is just building up, okay, what if this team scores 10 plus runs? And then the secondary stack is, here are guys that I think have home run power. And then sometimes, depending on if my pitchers are way too expensive, I might go 4-3-1, just in case I need like a cheap secondary stack or a cheap first stack. But every single time, I'm just really trying to fit. I really aim for the correlation. I don't like skipping more than 2 spots in the order, but if I have to, then I have to. And hopefully they just put up 12 runs and I come out on top on variance.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. We keep talking ownership. You make your own ownership projections, right?
I do an aggregate of industry projections, and then I have a global variable on the back end that I also use. So I do a whole bunch. I have like 6 different sources that I aggregate together, and then I have an algorithm that kind of like molds it into what I think is right.
Gotcha. What other tools we got there? Because I know you mentioned your like 8+ runs. Yeah, I know you have a lineup deal. You have all kinds of stuff, but you've got some really cool stuff that I remember checking out before. So what do you got there?
I have so many things. Can I share my screen? Is that
I don't know if you can. I know I'm able to do that, but I don't know if you can try.
I'm gonna give it a shot.
There's the share button at the bottom. Can you share? Yeah, there you go, right there. And then I just got to add it. So there you go.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. So anyway, this is what you're going to see when you look at the range of outcomes. There are a couple other things here. There's a ADP calculator, which you get as a monthly subscriber, which we'll talk about soon. That's season long stuff.
Yeah.
But the main things are the range of outcomes, the strikeout prop model, which will not be free this year. That's just going to be subscribers. So I need to change that. And then the game betting model. But the range of outcomes is the bread and butter, right? So this is, we're going to have team metrics, pitcher metrics, and hitter metrics. The team metrics mostly look at macro stuff. So the background of my model is that I built up what's called a game level simulation model. So there's a difference between game level and player level simulations. I do player level simulations for basketball and football, meaning that I focus on top down, I build out projections for players, and then I simulate each player's outcomes you know, 5,000 times. And then I find whatever their medians are, their ceilings, whatever their range of outcomes is, blah, blah, blah. That's player level. Game level means that I'm actually projecting the games as they run. So with baseball, baseball is probably my most powerful model because it is a game level simulation, meaning that it is simulating the actual games themselves. As if you were to go to MLB The Show and just like go simulate a game, my model is doing the same thing on the back end. So because of that, I can pull a whole bunch of really cool stuff. So this was during the playoffs, and that's the example that I have up on the site. So you can see in the game level stuff, the team metrics focus mostly on the macro, like the team level of things. So the scoring percentages tell you who is the average win percentage, like who wins the games most often. So Dodgers 48%, Astros 48%. Who has the top score on the entire slate? Astros 38%, Braves 14%. What the average hitter projection was, how many times each team had 8+ runs in the simulations. This is the first thing that you'll see. 8+ runs is the most important thing here and probably the thing that I use the most. But when you're betting, like you can go and make bets too, like the 5-inning lead, how often a team has a lead after 5 innings. You can go bet on the Dodgers for that. You can bet on their score after 5 innings. You can bet on the average score. So this is the team like implied run total, right? Mm-hmm. Astros at 5, 4.86, blah, blah, blah. So this captures a lot of really cool stuff. Then when you go over to the team range of outcomes, you can see how often they score different run sets. So the Astros are the top scoring team 38% of the time, but they do score 0 runs 3% of the time. Dodgers score 0 runs 8% of the time. That's important to know. The Astros score 5 runs 16% of the time. They score 8 runs 6% of the time, whereas the Braves score it only 2% of the time. So this is really important for understanding the range of outcomes on teams, because when a team is chalk, right? Like if the Astros were chalk, people are like, oh, well, they have the highest implied run total. It's like, yeah, but they still score 0 or 1 run 10% of the time. Like that's important to know. There's a 10% chance that they're going to just straight up flop. There's a 20% chance that they only score 2 runs. So that stuff's really important. And then I also have aggregate stuff here where it shows how often teams score the run plus however many. So score more than 0 runs 96% of the time for the Astros, more than 3 runs 75% of the time. Then we go over to the stack projections. So this is kind of, now we're taking into consideration pricing and the players. So it shows how the average price of the players on the team, and I do DraftKings, FanDuel, and Yahoo, shows how many home runs it's projected for in the simulations, average projection, average value. So the Astros were the best value on the slate. And then the stack ranks. So stack ranks are kind of like, this is what I had originally before I built projections. And this stuff is meant to give you a top-down look at teams and show what teams are the best for finding upside. So like the opponent Sierra, like the opposing pitcher Sierra, the opposing bullpen slug percentage, opposing ex woba allowed, stuff like this. This is stuff that you would see on like Baseball Reference and like fan graphs and stuff like that. But it's still really, really important to give consideration, because like the Dodgers or the Astros look like the best stack in terms of value in all the other metrics, but they're kind of like the third down here, right? In terms of the value rank, they're the third down behind the Red Sox and the Dodgers. And that's just because the opponent X-Tone 1 per 9 is a little bit lower. The opponent, like the park effects are a little bit lower. The IRT is a little bit lower. So important context for those things. I like using all these things together. And when we get into the actual season and the Discord, we'll talk more about it. Then we have the pitcher metrics. So we have projections, we have range of outcomes. The projections are going to show, again, for betting purposes, you can see how often pitchers are giving up walks, how many hits they're projected for, how many home runs they're projected to give up, how many earned runs. It also gives you strikeouts, and we'll go over and look at the strikeout model here in a sec, but it also gives you projections for each site, and then gives you range of outcomes. So how often pitchers are the top overall scoring, shows how often they score 5 to 10 fantasy points, like Chris Sale scoring 5 to 10 fantasy points 13% of the time, which is over twice as much as Julio Urias does. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that, really important context. And then we have FanDuel range of outcomes, and then pitcher ranks, kind of the same thing as the team ranks. And then finally, we have the hitter metrics. So we have the projections here, which is the main thing now. And then the ranks. So the main thing with the projections, that's going to show you hits. It's going to show you how the projections are built up. And then it's going to have the projections over here for DraftKings and FanDuel. And then for the ranks, it's going to show you a little bit more context as to why guys would be good. And also the ranks can give you a really good understanding of unowned players and underowned players for GPPs. Like Jose Siri has a really, really good expected home run per plate appearance. Granted, very low sample size on this dude, but still good expected home run per plate appearance, good X slug percentage, good X WOBA, stuff like that. Again, more context for when you're picking players. So that's all the stuff in the actual range of outcomes, which is really, really fun to use. A lot of really good information there. And then we can go over into the strikeout model. And the strikeout prop model comes from the projections as well, comes from the models. And what you'll do is over here, you're going to have a list of pitchers, right? Whatever pitchers are on the slate. And then you can put in the bet that you are trying to beat, right? So say that Luis Garcia's was 4.5. Let's say that he was negative 125 to hit that. It's going to tell you what the line odds were. So this line, it's going to tell you what the odds were from the simulation, and it's going to tell you to bet the over or the under. So the line odds here imply only a 55% chance that he hits it, but the sim odds were 64%. So it's telling you to bet the over. However, if you were to say, put this at like negative 250, then now the line odds are 71%. The sim odds don't think he hits that, so you bet the under. It's a really, really cool intuitive tool. It's very, very strong. It comes straight from the simulations. So this, the important thing to remember is that this is tied into the projections, right? So these pitchers are going up against the hitters in the projection. So that's how the entire model is being built out. I love using this in the season. It's one of the reasons why I'm most excited for baseball to come back. Because I love the strikeout.
You could use that for prize picks. Yeah. That'd be awesome. Yep. Yeah, that's big right there.
And then the game betting model shows everything. Again, this comes from the simulations, but it shows the money line odds for the players. It shows how often I have them winning. So I had the Braves winning over the Astros. The spread odds, how often they cover the spread and how often they cover. So it told you to put down a bet on the Braves over the Astros. So it'll show this for all the teams. You can also type in what your money line is that you're seeing. So say that the money line that I have is not the same one that you have. Maybe you have them at like 120. You can put that in and it's going to change it. If the book that you were looking at had the Braves as favorite, say like 175, then now you don't want to bet them because that the money line odds at whatever book you're looking at are too high. So all of this stuff is built to be usable and changeable by subscribers. So a lot of the things that I build, you're going to be able to enter in different money lines. You're going to be able to enter in different Vegas information so you can see what it would look like for you specifically. Because I know that a lot of things don't really fit everybody. It's not one size fits all. So I always want to try to give people the option to put in on whatever line that they see so they can bet based on their own terms and based on whatever sportsbook they're looking at. So I don't give out information that can't be used by everybody. So, yeah.
No, that's pretty sweet. Like, I just letting you keep going because there's so much going on there. But the range of outcomes and all that stuff for DFS, I love, and I love the fact that you were hinting at it there. I know when people join, there'll be more explanation and all this stuff. But like when you mentioned Chris Sale's 5 to 10 point deal, that basically gives him a better floor potentially. But then if you looked up at Urias, he had better odds to go higher points down the end. So it's little things like that. The more you get comfortable, and that goes into the proper lineup building, like James was saying, like you start to see different things that stand out. Because yeah, Chris Sale might be the favorite to get 5 to 10, or the best odds to get 5 to 10, mm-hmm. and he actually has great odds to go deeper. But Urias actually, you know, 6% 5 to 10, but you get 15 and 20 17, and he's got some of the best odds to get 20 to 25, and then 25 to 30. So right. It's like a different, like it's your GPP versus cash potentially mindset, mm-hmm. looking at these two. And I think it's a great way without, because you know, there's certain sites you go like, oh, here's your cash list of players, here's your GPP list, but now you can kind of see it in front of you and make your own decisions and build lineups. And I think it makes you a better player because you're having to build them, not mm-hmm. just having someone hand it to you. Like James was saying earlier, that's one of the things I try to tell people. It's like, I'll lead you in the direction, like these are the thoughts I have, and I'll answer your questions, but you need to like put the pieces together a little bit and see where you're coming from. Otherwise you're never going to learn. And what, like James says, I kind of have fun learning and teaching more than, you know, just like plug and play stuff. But I think that's cool. There's a lot of really like the hitter stuff, a lot of intriguing stuff you have going on there.
Yeah, I have taken a lot of time to build out these models, and I have built them in a way that people can really like use this stuff to get better, and not even get better at like building lineups, but get better at thinking about DFS. Because when you just look at a median projection, if you look at a median projection of like Julio Urias at 21 and Chris Sale at 19, like so many people are like, oh, well, Julio Urias is the better play. It's like, I mean, his median is better, but like, have you looked at how often he actually scores really, really well? Have you looked at how often he fails? Understanding that it is a range of outcomes, that it is not just a median outcome. It's not just that 50th percentile. That's really, really important to know. It's really important to build that into your process and have an understanding of, okay, this guy could do really, really well, or he could fail. What ownership do I really want to stake that on? Like when we're talking about Chris Sale, for instance, if Chris Sale, or no, let's talk about Framber Valdez, right? Framber Valdez has a 14% chance of getting blown up. My threshold for getting blown up is 5 points or less in DFS. So he has a 14% chance of getting blown up, but he also has the highest percent chance of scoring 20 to 25. That's a huge range of outcomes, right? Like he's either going to get destroyed or he's going to do really well. If he's really high owned, do you really want to stake a 35% owned pitcher on a 14% chance of getting blown up?
Probably not.
Maybe not. Yeah. If he's really low owned, though, maybe you do want to stake that because you have such a high chance of having a high outcome.
Well, no, it also shows you real quick. It also shows you if he is a 35% stack against him.
Yeah,
because exactly. He has that chance to get blown up. Everybody loves Framber. We all love Framber. He's great. But if he's 35% owned with a 40% chance to get blown up, here's your leverage play right out the gate. Now right. You can go do pretty much whatever you want. So back at you.
So that stuff, it's just important. I really do try to build my models to make people think about DFS in a more effective way. So I think that the baseball models certainly take that to the highest level that I can provide, really, just because this model is like my baby. It's like literally the largest code that I've ever written, and I love it so much.
It's awesome. Like I know you've put a lot of time into it, and just looking at the different stuff that you have, and it's pretty intense. And you have the K model, but if people just kind of set some time aside, you can look at the home run props. You can look at a bunch of things just by looking at your model. If they really want to go hard, because I keep using Prize Picks, because that's a great one. Like we've all got like kind of little groupings with them and probably codes and everything, but it's a really good, easy prop bet tool to use, but you can use anything. They all have prop bets. And you could do a tug, like you're on this page right here. The home runs, like the guy that projected the home runs or RBIs, because it'll be like the runs, RBIs, or hits and walks or whatever. Like there's different props. You can kind of look at, okay, he's projected to do X and Y. Let's see what he does and things along those lines. Or even just the projected in points, because most of them are scored on DraftKings style scoring. So it is a very, very cool tool in that regard. So basically what I'm saying, even if you don't really want to play DFS, but you like to gamble, these DFS tools can be used in that nature as well.
Yeah, and I'm really trying to push. I'm trying to build some specific models for Prize Picks as well, just because I know that a lot of people use it, and I do want to. I think that the way that I build models speaks very well to the way that Prize Picks needs to be played. So I am trying to build some more things, and hopefully I have a Prize Picks specific model for baseball when it starts up. It shouldn't take that long to build because I already have all the data in the back.
Yeah, so you already have everything you pretty much need.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're good there. All right. As you can tell on the outline, I said we're pretty much having an open discussion, and we've already gone this long. Like, I could sit here and talk to you forever about this, but I do want to get to your season-long stuff. So do you have any final thoughts on this? Because this, I always sound like I'm kissing your butt, but it's very, very impressive, especially because for me, as someone that kind of does my independent thing, I love how you've done that. There's like a bunch of big sites, and there's a lot of friends we have with these big sites. Mm-hmm. Like, they're great people. But the fact you've done this on your own from like the ground up, like your baby, like you said, I think it's truly, truly awesome.
Yeah. I mean, closing thoughts, like one of the benefits of joining the site and being in the Discord is that I don't have a lot of subscribers. I have a dedicated group, and I have a small community that really does want to play and get better and understands how to use these models. So if you want to get better and you want to learn how to think this way, and think in a range of outcomes and not just like plug in picks, then I can't think of a better place to do it. I really do think that I build a good fostered community that can teach people how to be better at DFS. So especially with models like this. And like you said, I've been doing it by myself, and I know my models in and out. And you know, hopefully one day I can hire an intern to run these things for me, because it does get.
Oh, I see your tweets sometimes, like when there's stuff going on. I can only imagine when there's multiple sports going on and stuff. It's like,
I have 14 different models that I run. Yeah. 14. You have 447 episodes of your podcast, and just this podcast, and I have probably ran thousands of different slates in just the last couple of years. So it's a labor of love for sure.
Well, and people, just to like real quick put it into more perspective, with the wonderful NBA product we have, every time there's a late scratch before lock or something, he has to rerun the model to see how it affects things. So you know how chaotic that sport is these days. Just put that into perspective for you. But at least baseball, knock on wood, you usually get lineups like an hour or so before lock, so you can kind of get that kind of rocking and rolling. But let's talk season long. Let's have some fun here, because I find this stuff very, very entertaining, because and again, it goes back to your DFS mindset of being kind of contrarian on things. Your tools are great because they do point out very good points. And I laugh because when you post them, it usually is like stuff that rubs, quote unquote, the majority opinion differently. And I enjoy it because I like making people have to at least think about it. Like, let's think about, why is this the case? And so let's talk about it. You have like an ADP model that I think is very, very awesome. So elaborate on that for some people.
Yeah. So when I look at season long, I'm gonna take a different approach at NFL season long this year. But when I look at baseball season long, I don't think that you really have to work that hard. And I don't want to work that hard when it comes to baseball season long, because I don't think that you need to. I think that a lot of people make a lot of really, really easy mistakes just because of their biases and just because of name value and just because people want certain things to happen and people don't have a really good concept of like projections up against each other. So I went out there and I developed something called adjusted ADP, which is a model that uses an algorithm that creates similarity profiles for players and holds them up against each other, and then develops a new ADP for players, so where they should be drafted based on their similarity profiles. So the idea here is, like, if people want to take some hitter in with like pick 60 or something like that, we want to make sure that you're not overpaying for that player, right? Like, that's the entire concept of season long. You want to make sure that you are getting values based on who you pick. If you pick somebody at spot 100 and you think they should go at 80, that means that you have made value there. If you pick somebody at 200 and they finish the season at 140, you made value there. But on the flip side, if you pick somebody at pick 100 and they finish at 170, you lost value there. The entire idea is try to mitigate how much value you've lost in your drafts. So this tool aims to do that in a way that is visualized. So what it does is it'll take a player, like, let's say, who's a popular pick right now?
Do you want like a high pick? Because Vladimir Guerrero Jr. gets everyone's blood boiling.
No. Give me like something in the middle. Give me
go Adalberto Mondesi.
Okay. Did I spell that right?
Yeah, you're good. I think so. No, it's ADAL.
ADAL. Still misspelled it. Hold on.
ADALBER.
We're just gonna do this with someone easier.
Yeah, there you go. Problem solved. Lindor, that's a good one. Yes.
Yeah, let's just go Lindor. So when we compare, is saying, one, he's valued correctly. His ADP is 42.
Real quick, which ADP are you using?
This is from NFBC.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah. And I mean, I do use, so if I can't find something in NFBC, then I'll use some aggregate of the rest of them, and I'll use averages. Okay. But most people I'm going to be able to find. Yeah. So this uses NFBC ADP. His ADP is 42 as of right before this podcast. His adjusted ADP is 43.07. So he's appropriately valued. He has 100% comps with Marcus Semien, who is being drafted 31, and Cody Bellinger, who's being drafted 83. He has good comps, 89% comp with Albies, Machado, Teoscar Hernandez, George Springer, and Wiley Adams. The thing that's likely throwing off his ADP the most is being compared with Wiley Adams, who's being drafted at 165, by the way, and compares to Francisco Lindor.
Beautiful.
So what we're going to want to do after this, after I explain a little bit, is go take a look at Wiley Adams, because or Adames. I don't remember how to spell it.
Willie Adames.
Thank you. Yeah. Yep. So we're going to want to take a look at his. So let's go do that really quick.
This is awesome. I love this.
This is such a cool tool.
It is. It really, because I love, one of the things I love the most, and I literally talked about it on a show last night, was I love being able to compare players where you can find value in a draft, because I think that makes you build the best possible team possible. And I've mentioned biases so many times on that show. Like, your opening statement to this is almost like exactly what I said on last night's podcast with someone else. That's why I love this tool so much.
It's so important. So we're looking at Wiley Adames here. So his ADP is 165. His adjusted ADP is 143. So there, right there, is automatically, we think that there's a value here. The reason for that is because look at these comps, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like Real Muto, Chris Bryant, Jorge Polanco, Austin Meadows. These are guys who he matches up against very, very well. And when I say that, I mean, just look at him and Real Muto, right? The average 256 versus 252. OBP 332, 325. Slug 440, 440. OPS, same. Total bases, Adames has more. Home runs, more. RBI, a little bit less. Stolen bases, a little bit less.
And these are your projections, right? Or are you using the bat?
These are aggregate against industry. So, like, that's really, really close. And I understand that JT Realmuto is a catcher and positional scarcity and whatever. But the idea here is that they are basically the same.
It opens your mind to other possibilities.
If you are building out based on a category league, like a 5-cat or something like that, and you can get Wiley Adames at 165 rather than taking Chris Bryant at 81, why would you ever take Chris Bryant?
Yep.
In that case, like that, you're going to get the same stats. Or projected to have the same stats with Willie Adames as you would with Jorge Polanco at 99.
That's why Polanco and Dansby Swanson are great comps, because they're both shortstops. So yeah, like you can straight up just look at those. If people want to like get nitpicky about positions, there's two guys right there.
Yep. So you are either, and you can look at this two ways, right? You can either say you are overpaying for Jorge Polanco here, who has essentially the same projection as Wiley Adames, or you can say that you are underpaying for Wiley Adames at 165 because he has the same projection close enough as somebody like Jorge Polanco. So the way that this works, when we are looking for comps, we have the threshold here. So this is saying, and I have little tool tips in here, it's looking for a 10% match between each one of these categories. The proximity is how many matches it needs to have in order to be a comp for a player. So we can actually adjust those. When you go get a subscription to the site, a monthly subscription, I should say, because I have sold this tool in the past for $35. And a monthly subscription now is $30. And if you use the code DOUBLEDOM, all caps, you can sign up for a monthly subscription for $20 right now and then still have access to this tool, which is $15 off. You've already made money, blah, 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 whatever. And
you got 1 month for draft season, folks. This seems like a pretty simple thing to do.
pretty easy. But what you can do, actually, so say that we wanted to go back Francisco Lindor. If I can spell it right. And so when we compare him right now, spelled that wrong. One day I'll spell everything correctly.
You just need to create a drop down with every player's option.
And I can do that too, and I just have it. Maybe I'll do that today. Like after.
I know you can. That's why I wasn't worried about it. I'm like, that just solves every problem.
It does. So if you have this, right, like this is 10% this is 10% matches. If you wanted to say, okay, well, but what if I wanted to have a little bit wider of a net? You can change this to 20% and you can rerun and it's going to open things up.
Holy crap.
So now you have a lot more matches because it's within 20%.
Yeah. Right?
If you wanted to say, no, I only want things that are really, really close, you can go 5%. And then you don't have any matches because it's like it's just too close. But I have found that 10% and 80% is a really good match to give you very, very close projections on a lot of different guys.
Nice.
The other cool thing that you can do, say that you think that Francisco Lindor is better than this, right? You can go over to the user boosts. You can go into this dropdown and type in Lindor here. Then you can give him boosts. Say that you think that he deserves a 10% boost to his average. Say that you think that it's a 5% boost to his slug.
Basically what James is saying, you can make your own customized projection, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Say that you think he's going to steal 10% more bases and have 10% more runs. And then you go over into the comp sheet, and then you run, and now it's going to give you a little bit better of an adjusted ADP.
All of a sudden, Jonathan India shows up. That is really interesting now. It's a whole different set of players. That is interesting. I like this. So that's one thing I hate meaning to cut you off, but that's one thing that we talk a lot about with these projections, and you aggregated them, which helps a ton, but it feels like playing time is the toughest thing to predict. So you can do like playing or like projection per plate appearance, basically.
Yeah.
But if you believe someone's going to play 20 more games, just because, you know, what the computer made the projections doesn't understand how a situation on a team changed for playing time. Now you can adjust, like you're saying, boost them. And that opens up so much more. That's a cool little tool as well.
And that's a new thing added this year. I wanted to make sure that people could have that kind of control. And we've been doing hitters on this, right? But you can do pitchers too. So say that you wanted to look at pitcher comps. You don't have to change anything else here. You just type in the pitcher, and now you're going to say compare pitchers instead. And then you can see, okay, Joe Musgrove, ADP of 90, adjusted ADP of 92. Looks pretty good. But then you look through this list and you say, oh, well, Tarik Skubal is on this list. He's at 184. Let's see how he looks when we run this. Tarik Skubal. Hey, his adjusted ADP is only 145. So he looks pretty good. He looks like pretty good value here. And then you can do that for anybody that you want. When you're looking at just individual things. And these are the things that I post on Twitter. Whenever I see somebody like saying, oh, well, why would I want this guy instead of this guy? And then I go and I do this and I say, well, because of this. And sometimes people have a really good point of saying, why would I want this guy over this guy? Sometimes people are kind of having some biases there, or they think that the boosts need to be applied or something like that. Like Vlad over at FTN, he was talking about how he thinks Cody Bellinger should be so much better this year. So I put in a 10% boost and everything. And then it matched what he thought he should have been drafted at. So things like that are really important. But
I like that, because it's not just us changing the projections like we think. Is a lot of the times when you draft, you've done so much research, you know the game, blah, blah, blah. You're sometimes taking guys on the assumption that, hey, they had a down year, but I expect them to do this. So again, you're changing the projections per se.
Yeah.
But like what Vlad's thought is, well, you know, Bellinger had a messed up shoulder. He's recovering from last year. Now he should be healthy. He might not be the MVP, but let's look at him as like a in between the MVP and just the garbage that was last year. And like you said, you boosted it a bit. And now it's like, okay, this is Vlad's conversation. Obviously on Twitter, those conversations get strewed. Right. But like you just took 2 seconds out of your day and blah, 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 boom, now it made sense to the world.
Yep, exactly. So Cody Bellinger, for that example, he has an adjusted AP of 79 if you just use his base stats. But if you go in here and you boost him to whatever you feel like boosting him to, we'll just boost him 10% across the board here. Then we run that again. Now he has an adjusted AP of 15, which is miles better, right? Like, but he's projected really, really well against guys like Luis Robert, Kyle Tucker, Manny Machado now, rather than being projected guys that he was before. So it's a really, really good way to get a look at the comps that you can make and the values that you can find. One of my favorite things to do on this really is to like compare and then see guys that compare against these guys that look good and then rerun with them. So say somebody like Ian Happ. Right, Ian Happ has an ADP of 220 right now, but he's comparing pretty well with Cody Bellinger. So then when I run him, look at this value. Like his ADP is 220, his adjusted ADP is 117. He compares to Yelich, Chris Bryant, and Austin Meadows. And you can get him 220th. Things like that I think are really, really cool to do with this. But this is only one part of the tool, right? So this is comparing individual players against the rest of the league. You can also do a run of all of the hitters or pitchers within a certain range or the entire thing.
Okay, that's kind of what I was wondering there. That makes it even cooler, because when you're drafting, obviously, I'm in round 11. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not going to jump 100 picks, but where's my value? Okay, I like that a lot. Cool.
So you can do pitchers and hitters individually. Like say that we only wanted to look at the top 50 pitchers. You can put in 50 here, and then you can go pitcher ADP run. And this is going to look at the top 50 pitchers based on ADP, and it's going to compare them against each other. So you can see here, like the model, which by the way, last year the model was on Robbie Ray. This year it's Jose Berrios. Like
that makes me feel good because I have a ton of Jose Berrios already.
It loves Jose Berrios this year. It compares him against all the aces. It thinks that he's the guy who can break out and find that ceiling. It's always been a consistency problem, so it loves Jose Berrios this year. But when you're looking at this, we just ran the top 50 pitchers, right? So in the top 50 pitchers, it finds that the two best values are Shane Bieber and Jose Berrios. The worst value right now is Gerrit Cole, whose ADP is 10. He should be taken 29th overall. Walker Buehler looks like a really negative value as well. So his ADP is 18. His adjusted ADP is 50. So you can look at this and look at just pitchers or hitters. You can do that either way. Or you can go in and you can build a full draft board with a full AEDP run. And this takes about 45 seconds to run because there's a lot of
that's a lot of stuff. And while it's running real quick, just so people know, the projected values, it's based off the aggregate projections, correct? So it's not like James has a complete bias against certain players before they start coming with the pitchforks going, hey, no, blah, 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 so much better. It's legit, just like he's not even factoring into this, basically. This is just the numbers.
I don't care at all. I don't care about your favorite team.
I just wanted to make that clear to people. Be like, this has nothing to do with this. Like, this is legit just the numbers talking.
Mm-hmm. This is just math. It's just math talking. So, and like to take that even farther, this is based on draft value. So the important thing to remember with that is when we're looking at, it's based on auction draft value. Sorry, auction draft value. So the important thing to remember that is that the higher picks are much more valuable than the lower picks. So it's going to say that. Like if you have, say, Fernando Tatis Jr., model hates Fernando Tatis Jr. It has him as the worst value overall on the entire thing. It has him being taken 38th overall, and people are taking him first. So he's a massive negative value. But he only has a difference of 37. Whereas, like, let's find another person who's around the same. So Freddie Freeman's being taken 14th, but his adjusted ADP is 45. He's not near as negative of draft value just because he's not taken first overall. You have to dedicate so much of your equity into that first overall pick that taking somebody like Fernando Tatis Jr. is a massive negative value in this model just because of the way that he comps against other people. But this is a full draft board. Right. That's like this is going to go through 500 players and show you guys who should be taken much higher, guys who shouldn't be taken much lower, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then you can actually sort it by that. Right. So you can take this sort and you can sort by value. Shohei Ohtani, the top value overall. And that's because it counts both his pitcher and his hitter stats. So caveat there. But then you have Adolis Garcia, Hunter Renfroe, John Gray, Yusei Kikuchi, Bobby Witt Jr. These guys are all really good values in drafts. You can then sort by negatives. So you can go smallest to largest. This is actually the naming convention thing. So his adjusted AP shouldn't actually be 1,000. It's just because it's the wrong name. So if you were to have Jazz Chisholm, which I'll fix after this podcast, it probably wouldn't be this negative. Okay. But then you have CJ Abrams, you have Ronald Acuna Jr., who should be taken 38th, Devin Williams, Salvador Perez, who has been kind of like trendy because he had that year last year. Models don't think he's going to have that year. So him being taken 38th, he should be taken 109th overall. This is just how these things work out when you look at the actual value. And then you can sort by adjusted ADP back to the top down. And then you can just use this to be a straightforward draft throughout an entire draft.
And again, like you don't like the, for the listeners, you don't have to like draft them in this order, but what it tells you is, you know, use the ADP, then use this ADP, like adapted ADP, and you can find when to maybe jump and get a guy, or you can find where the value is and wait instead of drafting the, you know, Lindor at one spot, save your shortstop spot for Willy Adames later on or something. Mm-hmm. It tells you. So then where Lindor would have been drafted, you can go and take a pitcher or something else. Like that's the whole idea. It's another tool in the belt to help you make a more complete team and maximize your picks. That's the deal. It's not like straight up go 1 through 20 off this list.
What I told people to do last year is somebody like Jose Berrios. Like you don't, it's not saying that you should absolutely take him at 35. This is basically saying the earliest that you could take them is 35. And then you have 37 picks now between that and his ADP to pull that trigger. So if you don't want to spend your 35 on him there, just wait until the next round or wait until the round after that. He'll probably still be there. Likewise with Fernando Tatis Jr. It's not saying that you absolutely should not touch him ever. It's just saying that, like, at 38, that's a much better use of your draft capital than at one. Same thing with Freddie Freeman. Same thing with, like, Mike Trout. Mm-hmm. Mike Trout, his ADP right now is 13. It's saying that maybe if you can wait, you should wait one round to take him, which hurts my soul, by the way. Yeah. Because I love Mike Trout with everything. But it's saying that you should probably try to wait one round if you can. If he's still there, that's awesome. If not, you probably didn't miss out on all that much.
Yeah, no, I love it. It brings you in mindset so many things I try to do when I am getting ready for season long. When I talk about it on my podcast, all those things about, like, one of my series I'm doing right now on Fantrax is ADP analysis. And I just wrote an article, Edmund versus Wong. I don't know how they compare on yours, but ADP wise, they're over 100 picks apart. And if you just look at projections, they're very similar players. Like, Edmund had a peak season, Wong had an injured season. It's one of those deals, though, you can't predict injuries. You got to imagine some regression, and the projections factor all that in, and they're very similar ball players. And so why are you spending like 110 picks earlier on Tommy Edman? Like, it's just a conversation, not saying you can't do it, not that you shouldn't do it. It's just to open the mind to other options. Like, James is typing in Tommy Edman right now. We're going to run an ADP check on him. And apparently the 10% mark is his world. It's his jam. So he rates out very well on James, but then his adjusted ADP.
It pushes back to Akil Badu. If you go to 20%, start 15%.
Just Akil Badu, so, interesting.
Yeah, Akil Badu, that's an interesting one. And it's mostly the average that is the difference here. But, like, if you look across...
A lot of similarities.
Yeah. And then Colton Wong. Yeah, 279. So it drops down to in the middle of those two. They're very similar. There's very little reason to... Yeah, the model agrees with you on that.
And that's just kind of what I try to point out. This model does it much easier than me writing a bunch of gibberish on something. And it was so quick. If you're just listening through the podcast, obviously all these shows are on my YouTube channel. Like, this is a great one to check out on YouTube because James has shared his screen and runs you through it. And if you become a member with Double Dong, he'll run you through it even more. He's got all the tools, but it literally took seconds to erase a name, type in a name, hit a button, and it just boom, it's all right there. So it's not like you have to do a bunch of crazy stuff. It's pretty simple and pretty darn awesome. So I am a fan.
Thank you, sir. I put a lot of thought into this. And this tool, like, you can download this. Like, this lives on your desktop. And this is yours after you buy it. So after you get a subscription, you can just download this, and then you can just every single day I pull in the info for the aggregate, and all you do is just go up here, hit the refresh all. It's going to run a little background query down here. Then as soon as that's done, what you're going to do is hit fix names. And then that goes through and fixes things like the Jazz Chisholm issue, which I'm going to add him after this. But then you're good to go. Like, it's all updated. All the ADPs are updated. All the projections are updated. Everything's updated. So it lives on your desktop. You can do whatever you want after that.
That's pretty darn awesome. Pretty darn awesome. Do you have anything else going for season long? Because this is plenty, honestly. This gets you everything you need to do. But do you have any plans to do more with season long? Or are you sticking with this? And then when season starts, it's DFS season.
Definitely sticking with this. I think this is more than enough in terms of, like, setting you up for success in drafts, and especially in best ball. This is a really, really, really good tool for best ball. And
that's a great point. I didn't even think about it that way.
Now that the season has been officially started and, like, ratified, I'm going to be jumping into best ball contests and using this for every single draft. It's just, it's so good, especially for best ball, just because you can make those choices very, very easily. And you don't have to do the waiver wire stuff afterwards, right? So you're just building a team based on this stuff and then just letting it ride. And that's more than enough for that kind of thing. Who knows? Maybe I'll have somebody come in and guest write or something like that in the middle of the season for waiver wire pickups. But after DFS starts, it's full DFS. I wish that I had more time for other stuff in season, but I just straight up don't.
Yeah, I get it. Trust me, I get it. The things, but you do the DFS so well, I wouldn't really want to go too far from there. Yeah. Let's hit up a few listener questions, and we will wrap this bad boy up. Our buddy Yancey Eaton says, first off, high sex spots. Has James scrapped, I think he meant scraped, but scrapped anything from a data standpoint this year that just didn't yield the results he was expecting or ended up being just a massive waste of time?
Yeah. Okay. So I was thinking about this because I saw this question on Twitter, and I think the main thing that I tried to pull in was MMA data, because I was going to try to build.
That could be tricky. I could see that being tricky.
I was going to try to build a leverage model for MMA after talking to Blender a whole bunch on the RotoGrinders show. I was going to try to build a leverage model for it. So I was trying to pull in Vegas information, and I was trying to pull in like the finishing odds and like the go the distance odds and everything like that. But the way that it came together was just so jumbled and just unusable. And it took me like 3 hours to build the scrape. And I understand, like, when I say 3 hours, that's time to me. If something takes me more than half an hour to put together, that is a meaningful investment for me to put together the code for it. Put together a code for it for like 3 hours, came out just super jumbled. I just could not get it to sit the way that I wanted to go into the data tables the way that I wanted to. And since I was trying to aggregate together multiple different sites for it, it just wouldn't update on its own. Like, I put it together and I was happy with it for 1 week. And then the next week I tried to refresh it and it was completely out of order. And I was like, I don't care. Whatever, dude. I hate MMA. I'm never touching it ever again. So yeah, it's not that I couldn't use the data that I was getting. It's that if I wanted to use it every single week, I would have to rewrite the code to get it.
Yeah.
And from an automation standpoint,
that's not the purpose after a while. The purpose is to build the model or code that you can click a couple buttons and boom.
And that's just have it.
Supposed to do.
And just have it. Yeah. I'm building a Madden Sims model right now that's just gonna be click a button.
You degenerate.
It refreshes everything in the model. And like, that's the goal. You press three buttons and you're able to build a lineup, and that's fine. If I'm going to build for a niche sport, that's what I'm going to do. Press three buttons. I have a lineup that I can build. That's it. If it's anything more than that, yeah, I consider it a waste of time. So I did. I completely dropped the MMA leverage model because I just didn't want to build a robust enough scraper for it. And I just couldn't get it together.
Okay. Besides Madden Sims, do you have any other like new tools? Are you trying to expand on any sports you have now, like PGA? I know you got tennis going on. Is there anything else you're trying to enhance, basically?
Yeah. So like I said, I'm trying to build Prize Picks specific stuff right now. So that's kind of like my main thing. I should be building optimizers, but I just hate optimizers right now.
Well, it defeats the purpose of what you want to do is teach people how to build lineups, kind of.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but the point is, like, when you own a site, people want an optimizer.
They want the total package. Yeah.
Yeah.
I get it.
And like, I get that. And believe me, people, I hear you. I'm trying. But God, the NBA one broke the other day and it tilted me to the moon. And so I just, like, removed it from the site. And like,
this is where you need, this is where you need an intern to help you with other things.
Pulling it off, I'll work on it. But I'm like, if I can't have it consistently up there, I don't want it up there at all. So I should be building that. But I'm building the Prize Pick specific stuff right now. I do want to try to build a NASCAR model here soon, I think. I did build recently some updates to the PGA model as well, allowing people to build together some lineups on the models and pulling in overall golf ranking so that you can get a better idea of the values that you're putting into your lineups. But no, I mean, most of what I am trying to do right now is find ways to repay the community for being so awesome. So like, I really want to try to make it a way to where like I can build some referral codes or I can build some coupons or something like that to where if a subscriber is able to get somebody else to subscribe to the site, that they are making money off of that person as well, off of that person's subscription. I mean, so like, I'm trying to just make better systems that repay the community a little bit better because I'm nothing without the subscribers that I have. I'm nothing without the community that I have and the people who support me. So I'm mostly trying to focus on that. And you can go in the Discord and like every week somebody will ask for something if I can build this or if I can build that. And I'm always receptive because I just want to build the best models that people can have and that the best models that people don't want to go anywhere else for. So that's my thing. I'm always just trying to upgrade for people's wants and needs.
I love it. Junior JR asks, which team or player benefits most from the universal DH?
Oh, man.
It's a loaded question because Like the easy answer, the Dodgers probably, because they have so many veterans that'll move things in and out. But
yeah,
there's you have to go team by team, and it's there's a million articles on it. I'll tell you that much.
I'm sure. So. I think the team that benefits the most from the universal DH is the fans.
There you go. There you go. Because we don't need to see pitchers hit anymore. We get to see all that happen. So
it's probably the Dodgers.
It is.
Probably either the Dodgers or the Twins is the other one that I was thinking of. Just because the Twins have such strong DH options. And the probably those two, like top of my list. But I have to look farther in. I'm gonna start baseball things like tomorrow. So I'll probably have better answers to that later. But the real answer is the fans, because pitchers hitting is just fucking terrible.
It is. And then Nunya Biz asks, he's got a 14-team OBP keeper league, $300 budget for 30 players. He needs one of these remaining keeper options. So out of these guys, who would you like to keep? Kyle Schwarber for $11, Votto for $11, Mitch Haniger for $11, Adalberto Mondesi for $14. It's an OBP league, so Schwarber and Votto are much better in OBPs. Mondesi's an injury mess, and Haniger could be an injury mess.
Schwarber.
Yeah,
that's where I lean. I like Schwarber a little bit more than the other ones. I think for me, it's either Schwarber or Haniger. I'm not keeping Votto. I know that. Because, like, I just don't think, like, it's so hard to turn back the clock like he did last year and do it again the next year. Last year, I think, is very obviously a regression waiting to happen year and a super big outlier. So I don't trust Votto this year. Mondesi, obviously, the upside is just massive on him if he can ever just stay healthy. But I don't know. I guess it depends. Like, it's probably... That's hard. It's between those three, but it's hard. I think it has a lot to do with the rest of what your lineup looks like. If you need upside, you have to go with Mondesi, I think. Haniger is fine. Schwarber is fine. Schwarber's not going to do what he did last year where he hit a home run every single day either. I think Mondesi has the most upside of them. I think that Schwarber has the best floor, and I think that Haniger is a fine option. It's likely between Schwarber and Mondesi, depending on if you need floor or upside from that player.
Yeah, I lean Schwarber there for sure. Votto, I love. If it wasn't a keeper league, I'd say go ahead and grab Votto. But yeah, he's not going to be long for the tooth much longer. It could happen this year, as James said. So it's probably Schwarber or Haniger for me, and I'd probably go Schwarber just because even if the home runs cut back, which they should, his OBP skills are pretty darn elite.
Yeah.
So I'd go that
direction. He's definitely the best floor of those four.
Most definitely. Well, James, this will wrap up another wonderful time chatting with you, as always. Before we head on out of here, again, plug the site, plug your promo code, plug all the good stuff you got going on.
Yeah, paydirtdfs.com. Again, that is the new site. If you know me from the ghost.io site, then go over to paydirtdfs.com. If you sign up for a monthly subscription with code DOUBLEDONG, all capitals, you'll get 10 months off of your first month. You can check out all of the models. Again, it's every single sport. It's not just baseball. So everything that I offer there is including the subscription. If you have not already bought Theory of DFS, go buy that. It'll make you a better player. Everything that I build is to make you a better player. And the Discord is free. So if you want to hop in that, I tweeted out a link today. I'll tweet out another link after this for the Discord. But you can find a link to that on the site as well under the nav bar for Discord. It's free to be in. We talk all day, every day in different channels. Very active, lots of people help. So yeah, just all of those things. And happy day that baseball's back.
Yes, happy it's back, and I'm happy to chat with you, my friend. So everybody, make sure you check him out again on Twitter at paydirt_DFS, and check out the website, paydirtdfs.com. As you can tell, lots of great stuff that you can do to become a better season-long player for your draft season, and most importantly, a better DFS player. It's a big brain James has over there, and he's got all the goods, not just for baseball. That's one of the best parts as well, is you might sign up for baseball and you get all the other sports, and all of a sudden you're like, you know what, it's Thursday and we have a 3-game slate, let's see what esports are going on, or let's see what, like, and all of a sudden you're addicted to this. Like, that's the beauty of it, because some sites it's a sport by sport specific thing, and that just kind of, I think, is a silly model. So check it all out, and we will do this again sometime, James. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we will. We should.
We should for sure. Everybody, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 447 with the one, the only James McCool. Catch you all later.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.